Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new Hackers and HackZen podcast. You're about to join Erica, Jax, and John for an inclusive cybersecurity conversation designed to educate and break the stereotypes of cybersecurity professionals while providing life hacks on how to handle burnout, networking, and goal setting. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Welcome back. Today, our special guest is a talent and technology leadership veteran. Deidre Diamond is a founder and a CEO who has created the largest cybersecurity talent acquisition service and technology firm in the United States. She has a vision to remove the financial and emotional pain from job searching and career matching for cybersecurity professionals. Today, her vision is now a revolutionary job platform. Diamond is an advocate for workforce happiness and equality. She is a founder of a nonprofit, which she is focused on diversity and inclusion. Oh my gosh, Deidre, it is so awesome to have you on the show. Welcome, this is long overdue, and it's always great to just do a reconnect with you. How are you today?
Oh my gosh, I'm wonderful. It's great to be with you. Thanks for being so kind to have me. You all are rock stars too, and I'm ready to share rock star information. Yeah, we're all dancing.
You are an absolute rock star. You are a powerhouse. And what I'd love us to do to kick this off is have you share a little bit more about your personal journey of what led you into getting into focusing in on workforce happiness and equality?
Yeah, absolutely. This is super important because the answer to that question really is the reason why I represent the 1% of women that are founding tech CEOs, and that there's only 1% of us. And that's because I walked into a culture out of college, hired by two serial entrepreneurs that were all about training and developing and building family-spirited businesses that turned into wealth. Literally, like the wealth piece was a part of this story. So, I worked for them for 21 years across three companies before I founded my own organization that you mentioned earlier, is CyberSN and Secure Diversity. And so it's literally my luck to have run into these folks. And certainly I have natural talent like we all do. They helped me cultivate it. And I ran with it, and there was equality. There was no difference between how I was treated and how the men that I worked side by side were treated. And so, you know, fast forward, and I'm founding my own organization, and I'm realizing that I'm the 1% because I was super clueless to it prior, because our organizations for 21 years were filled with diversity and inclusion. And so now I'm out in the public talking about building my own company, and people are asking me, how did you do this? How did you do this? And I thought, holy cow. Oh my gosh. Right. You know, like what I walked into, nobody else has. Oh my God. And, you know, it's just started to freak me out. So literally, and particularly for my sisters. And so that's when I realized, oh, I got to help solve this. I got to talk about what our cultures looked like and what I've developed in these cultures over the years. So that's how it started. And I'm super lucky to have run into these two serial entrepreneurial men where everybody sticks together and builds companies and gets trained and treated well. Isn't that fascinating? Like, where does that exist? Right? And how does it exist in capitalism? Is, you know, right? Like, and that's why I'm out here saying it. Look, Rapid7 went public. I was the first VP of sales. I was there 4 years. My first company is a $1 billion company just about today, Motion Recruitment. You know, CyberSN is off the charts successful and moving and grooving and going to change the game in staffing. And so we're making money and playing capitalism. And yet still there's love in the culture. There's support in the culture. There's acknowledgement of accountability. But we all want the same seven things. It's sort of, you know, I say seven things and we can talk about it in a minute, but it's sort of ridiculous that this isn't common. It really, bothers me that this mentality isn't common.
Yeah, no, it's It's really interesting. You said a lot that I think resonates with the three of us. And then I can only imagine that's really going to resonate with a lot of the listeners. Something that you mentioned quite a bit in the past few minutes is culture, right? And culture. How important is culture to pushing a company in the right direction?
Yeah, I think like most words, they get lost in translation. And the word culture, let's talk about it for a minute, because you hear culture and people think it's we got foosball and we give free lunches and we can sit anywhere in the office, we can move. That's not culture. Culture is behavior. Behavior, which is why I'm out there talking about behavioral standards, behavioral models. And so it is a behavior of support, a behavior of understanding that humans make mistakes. And as long as they're not intended to harm others, you can pretty much work through them very easily. And if they are intended to harm others, well, that's challenging. And that's just a part of being in, working in teams and people, and you got to deal with it. Really, culture is about mental safety. And if one can have mental safety and equality in roles and responsibilities and promotions and money and all the things that we all are, a part of this system, we want the same things. And so that to me is culture, right? Empathy is culture. High emotional intelligence is a good culture, where people actually understand that we all feel pain and we all feel pain for similar reasons and sadness. And so therefore bring joy to people's lives and figure out how to participate in that capacity and still do good business, not even still and do good business,
Right.
Culture is really about behaviors. And I think that, we all know what's happening in our cultures now,
Yeah. I mean, just turn on the news, right?
Yeah. Or look at the retention statistics of our community of cybersecurity, which I fell in love with. I'm a criminal justice by degree major, double major. And so I thought I was going to be a criminal attorney and then realized I don't want to be a part of the system. Once I got there, I was scared the hell out of me. but I always was intrigued by criminal minds and the mind in general. Like, why do people do the things they do and make the choices they make? And so, I'm fascinated at this level of how far behind we are to understanding that we can have more powerful results by actually investing in emotional intelligence training as much as we invest in these other hard skill trainings. And so, really this is where the focus needs to be in order to get these cultures the way that we want them, where people aren't burning out or moving jobs every, 18 months is on average for a chief information security officer. And if the person at the top's moving like that, and it takes a year to find the job, which means they're looking at 8 months in, and I don't blame them because they're not treated the way they need to be treated. And so how does that trickle down?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And, there's something that resonates with what you just said. There's a lot that resonates and kind of forms its own question of itself for a lot of us, because like you said, retention for, typical cybersecurity professionals, 18 months, 18 months to 2 years, and then they go to look to either make that lateral move to a company with better culture or a company that's going to allow them to make the vertical move. However, I am kind of curious on like your elevator pitch style of answer on do you think companies kind of masquerade that quote unquote culture has, hey, we're going to pay for your Starbucks and we're going to, give you a nice company MacBook and, let you do this and this, but we're going to work you, 60 hours a week. And if you don't meet deadlines, you're going to get bad reviews. Do you think they often do the first thing and then don't mention the latter, and they propose that has culture to lure people in?
Yeah, I don't think it's conscious. I don't think it's as if they're malicious. I just think it's the easiest thing to do. Like, that's not hard to sell.
Yeah.
What's hard to sell is I'm going to tell you how you need to behave.
Right.
You know, like that's hard to sell. And it's a tricky thing to actually be in the place of saying this is the behavior that is allowed and not allowed. And I walk that line every day. And I have from the beginning. I mean, not only did those founders offer that opportunity, but they empowered me. I mean, I was running a $30 million business at 25 years old that I built, you know, from entry level training, an army of, you know, people I've built in this world. And so, you know, that's training and development of people, and we stick together. I mean, we're still an army out there today, of course. And I'm talking thousands, you know, not just hundreds. These are all entry level programs in all departments. But anyhow, you know, it isn't conscious, but it's easy. And, you know, where's the support of who's making the rules? And do we even like the rules? And how do we enforce the rules? That's hard. And yet, super has to happen if we're going to have happiness at work and stop this madness of moving around. You know, I say this often, you know, I love cyber professionals, you social servants, man, so cool. And if you're going to leave, if you're a cyber professional, you're going to leave your job, it's gotta be pretty serious of unhappiness going on, right? Because there's a commitment. And knowing how broken job searching is, considering that's what my company focuses on solving, it means that somebody looked for a while, 3 months, 6 months, could be a little bit longer. That's a vulnerability in itself. You know, like our protectors are distracted by being unhappy, and yet they're to protect us. And I don't, you know, that's not fair. Like we should be treating them like kings and queens, and you know, having them protected as much as they're protecting us, right? And I don't understand that it's like doctors, you know, they get protected and have places to sleep and, you know, shifts. If there's something going on and they can't make it the next day because they were up for 2 days, they're not expected to be there at 8 a.m. or online at 8 a.m. You know, so it's just. There's we got normal what's going on with human treatment, and then we've got okay, and then apply it to cyber professionals that are protecting us. Oh my, okay, that's freaks me out.
Right, yeah. Right. So, Deidre, this is super, super insightful. I love this conversation. Something that you said earlier really stuck with me, and that was when you said emotional intelligence and the role that that has to play into the respective culture. So I want to dig into that a little bit. How do you believe that emotional intelligence coupled with, you know, a healthy mindset plays a role in workplace happiness?
Yeah. So let's talk about it. So EQ, emotional quotient, and IQ make up our personalities. Mm-hmm. Right. Our personalities are what we interact with every day. And, you know, we interact with humans all day long, all of us for, you know, gone are the days of not. And we don't, you know, gone are the days of even tech people are in the back room, right? And so EQ is the capacity to be aware of, control, and express one's emotions and to handle interpersonal relationships judiciously and empathetically. That is literally the definition of EQ. Mm-hmm. So emotional intelligence is the key to both personal and professional success in that definition, without a doubt. And IQ is the abbreviation for intelligent quotient, a person's level of intelligence measured by tests.
So what I've been noticing is, you know, emotional intelligence has not been a factor until very recently. And that is something that I'm starting to hear more and more about. And I think it's because we've come to a place in the world where we've realized culture is extremely important. Culture makes it or breaks it for people. You know, one bad taste of culture could tarnish the reputation of that organization in an employee's eyes, right? And that, you know, can have a domino effect. We all know it. We know how the gravity of that. And it could be one scenario that has this giant impact. So I kind of have a piggyback question, you know, how do we continue to express emotional intelligence's importance in the role that it plays here? How can we get better informed on it? And how can we as leaders increase our level of intelligence when it comes to that.
Yeah. Yeah. So great point. This is, we're feeling this now. I started talking about it about 5 years ago and RSA gave me a spot to talk about it. But, you know, it's really, we're hearing it more and more because we're now a service industry. We're no longer working with machines and factory lines and not interacting with humans. We're talking to each other all day long. All day long, we're communicating with other humans. And that's why this has become a problem, because the training isn't there to learn how to communicate with others. And which is the second part of what you asked me. And that is that really good news is our EQ does not cap out. You know, your brain on the emotional intelligence can keep growing. It doesn't cap out. So we need the training. You know, we need the care. There's programs out there that I really like. I have my own that I run that incorporates a lot of them, but you get a Myers-Briggs helps you understand each other, right? Situational leadership really helps managers manage people without emotions and actually manage based on tasks and projects. I'm sure there's others out there. Those are two that I really adore. Plus the one I roll with, which is my EQ skills tree that's become kind of famous out there. It's a tree because, you know, we can keep growing, but it's got all the skills on it, the things right. that I teach, you know, win-win communication, listening, making and managing measurable agreements, willingness to confront, the willingness to externalize internal communication. You know, those are skills. That a skill is something that you don't have to think a lot about for it to happen, right? So a skill is something that you've got to make it, you know, repeat it often, or excuse me, the task, you have to repeat it often and to make it into a skill. And so this training has to be constant. It can't just be once, just like our other trainings. It's mm-hmm. a constant. And so that I come from that. I was in a training meeting every day. And then when I became a manager, I was in a training meeting twice a week. And then when I became a director, it was once a week, you know, but it never ended. And then I'm giving meetings to all the people underneath me on a regular basis, training meetings. And so there's a commitment to excellence of creating these behaviors that really then become contagious. And what ends up happening, we call it the bullpen, because, you know, these days everybody been working in the bullpen the last 20 years, is that the bullpen manages everybody, not the quote company, meaning we all manage each other. Like, we don't accept poor behavior. That, you know, you sort of get eaten like a wolf if you come in with poor behavior. And so you're either correcting it or you're leaving, right? And that really makes it easier to run as a company. But my point is that ultimately what happens when you have that foundation of a culture of strong, powerful, you know, behaviors that create mental safety, the people themselves will manage to work together well and weed out bad apples if they exist. Like, truly a bad apple to me is somebody that just doesn't want to be a part of, you know, isn't capable of being a part of positive, powerful energy. It's rare, I believe. I think most everybody is. We can definitely change this. Now, here's the number one problem as to why people have conflict at work that doesn't get resolved. Roles and responsibilities clearly defined in project, you know, for one's job, but then project based too. You know, this is like one of the number one, because that's where conflict, you know, somebody didn't do something, somebody didn't finish something, somebody said they were going to do something for a project, and then they think, I didn't say I was going to do that, or, you know, those types of things is what really is where the most conflict is. And then, of course, as was mentioned earlier, if I don't have a career path, that's just, you know, that's not necessarily interacting with anybody, but that's a lack of emotional intelligence in that department. To care for the person or the people that work there, which is advancement.
Yeah, and I'd like to touch on something you had just mentioned on being the number one area of contingency for unhappiness is basically clearly defined roles, knowing what your job is, knowing what your requirements are from your boss. I see that as a huge communication issue, even in the firms in the military and in the private sector. When I don't know what is expected of me, it creates unhappiness because I don't know if I'm doing a good job or not. Typically, a boss, what I've noticed is usually a boss won't say anything until you're doing a bad job. And so, yeah, and that's not a good way to work either. But I would love to kind of move this conversation in a little bit different direction, but down a path of if there are individuals on this podcast right now listening and that maybe they are in that, in what you're talking about, of feeling very unhappy and they don't know what their position is and what it's defined and what is required of them, and or they don't feel that they have equality within their place of business. Are there any tips? Are there any guidance that you could give them, any guidance that you provide to them that may help them realign themselves and just feel like part of the community again? Or maybe that tip is to get a new job. What would your thoughts be on that?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm a big fan of externalizing our internal communication. It is so important, meaning we're all talking to ourselves in our heads on a regular basis. And that needs to get out, and it needs to get out to a person, the person that can help you solve whatever you're dealing with. And I know that sometimes we feel like there isn't a person that can help us solve. And my recommendation is that still to talk to the people that are supposed to solve these problems for you, because give them a chance. And then ultimately, you know, if you need to move on or not based on how they respond to you. And therefore, you know, don't let fear get in the way, because if you're not feeling treated well, then you're not treated well. So then the question is, how do you craft a conversation that creates change, that creates it so that you aren't treated well, which is called a win-win, you know, conversation? You know, how do you bring something that doesn't look like a win for somebody else when you, right? But turn it into looking like a win for somebody else. And this is the training that typically salespeople got only back in, you know, and certainly still even today, I would imagine, but, you know, me, I came up through sales. So this was our training. Like, how do we have a conversation with somebody where we know they want to do one thing, but we want them to do something else? And not to say that it's bad for them to do something else, but they're just, we need to help them get there. It doesn't mean it's bad for them. I'm not in that kind of sales. And so, you know, taking the time to craft it, we use something, terminology called kiss, kick, push, which is the first thing. I love seeing your face. It's so cute. The first, you know, I'm going to have a conversation with somebody. I have a challenge. It's possibly with them, or at least somebody that is close to the person that I'm having the challenge with. And so I'm going to talk to that person, and I'm bringing something that could potentially cause a shutdown in conversation, could cause anger, could cause somebody to not treat me well. So what's the best way to have this conversation? So we say kiss, kick, push, which is you always start with something kind. I know John's face is so cute. It's so cute. He's like, kiss? It's like when I talk about love in the workforce. It's so cute. Okay, so the kiss piece is say something positive that you really mean. Find something positive. Like, you know, there's a reason why you want to work there, or there's a reason why you also have some happiness. Or to use your example of, you know, your role isn't clearly defined, which you're absolutely right. That's a way to really harm somebody's psyche, because we can self-measure ourselves and we judge ourselves on a regular basis. So if I don't have information to judge myself on, now I'm judging myself on not knowing how to judge myself, which is all negative. So if we're using that example of, I don't know what my role is, I'm not feeling like I know where I'm going, and I'm going to talk to my boss, and I'm making win-win, and I want to kiss first, which is make the person feel loved, then I'm going to figure out what I really like about this person or this company or my job or whatever. And I'm going to sit down, I'm going to say, you know, I'm going to schedule the time, don't do a drive-by. You know, like, schedule the time, let the person know that you want to talk about your career, and then schedule the time. And you sit down and say, you know, I've been really thinking about my career. It's been a lot of fun. You know, kiss is also, it's a good moment. It's been a lot of fun to think about, and I'd encourage people to make it fun, because you're not, you don't, you have control. You can pwn your career, if you will. I really enjoy, working here because the people are, super committed and smart and driven and, whatever it is, make it genuine. It has to be genuine, no BSing, because you can't have a real relationship with anybody if you're BSing, which is not being transparent. So find that realness, prepare yourself for that kiss, put it out there, stop for a second. And then the next is the kick, right? Which is the thing that you're a little bit nervous about sharing, the thing that's concerning you the most. Get it out there, we call it a kick because it's usually something they didn't do for you or they did wrong. If you're maybe somebody that's reporting to you, right? And so it's deemed possibly negative, but we're going to turn it into a positive. And you say, and so I really wanted to talk to you because I'm unclear as to where my role's going, and I want to be clear about where my role's going. I want to be able to perform for you and for myself and for the team, and really like to get my role really defined. And that's the kick. And that wasn't that hard. Now, if somebody that works for us that maybe messed up on something, you can see where it's more of a kick, right? Which is usually where this model came from. and then the push, kiss, kick, push is, you got to get to a solution. Like you got to leave that conversation with like, you're in another zone. You're not in this you're in progress mode. You're in solution mode. So you've got, he's going to go or she's going to go define your role, or you're going to go define it and get back with them. But there's some sort of agreement that we're going to get this role defined by X date. And then, as well as where am I going, conversation is going to get addressed or is in process of being addressed. Meaning you don't leave that conversation until you've got an agreement of how you're going to solve this problem and it makes sense to you. And so you got to schedule the time, how much time, depending on the conversation you think it would take. And then you sweat through it. You let your armpits sweat, be uncomfortable. The more we're in these conversations that are uncomfortable, the better we get at having them, the less we'll sweat, I promise. And then if they don't treat you well in that conversation, absolutely, it's time to go.
That was a lot of insightful and interesting and enlightening information. I don't know. There's a lot of ways to describe that. I really, really like the kiss, kick, push model. I think that really kind of encompasses, a lot of ways of how we can, motivate and push ourselves in the workplace, but also keep realistic expectations and also be like, okay, well, if things start to go south or they start to go sideways, we know why. And we can kind of like dive into that and then basically do like root cause analysis and say, okay, well, we aren't the problem. It's the workplace that's the problem. Which I think a lot of us will tend to, when you have toxic leadership, and we've all experienced it, when you have toxic leadership, it tends to impact you way worse than it impacts the ones bringing it down or even the folks that you might even be working with.
Yeah. Yeah. Toxic's, toxic's a harder one to deal with than the scenario that we just went through. And, root cause analysis, absolutely. Keep working at it. You're not going to be perfect at these conversations. But confronting toxic behavior means willing to put a stake in the ground to say what behavior is acceptable and not acceptable. And we can do that up as much as we can do that down. So for instance, if that toxic person says something that's unprofessional or does something that's unprofessional, then the conversation is, I'm not willing to work in an environment that allows this behavior. And so either your behavior changes or that whoever you're talking to, is willing to go talk to that person and let that person know that behavior doesn't exist here, or I'm out. Let's stop accepting this behavior. Because toxic is toxic is you die, right?
Yeah.
And that's not okay. So, and that's what, you know, really being an ally to, having good work cultures, being an ally to your fellow humans means is if everybody takes a stance for what everybody mostly wants. I mean, it's kind of weird to think that there's more of us than toxic. So let's just demand it stops, you know, not weird, but good to think, you know, like we have the masses. So the toxics, you know, won't survive, if you will. They'll have to change their behavior in order to employ us. That's one of the things I'm super excited about with my platform. You know, when we launch in July 31st, the marketplace, and completely disrupt, you know, what this awful job searching system again, but for the final step, if you will, then, you know, it's going to be easy for people to move. Like, none of this slow bleed stuff anymore. You know, it's not going to take 3, 6, 9, 12 months anymore. Like, you want to get out? Oh, great. I'll have every job categorized in the United States for you in a way to searchable so that you don't have to sit around and have toxicness around you. That has been my vision from day one. And we're at the last step, such that every job is there in that taxonomy and it's searchable and so forth and so forth. So that this doesn't have to happen anymore, because it's a slow bleed with this broken job searching system, you know, meaning people are in these seeks slowly, you know, depressed, emotionally not feeling good, toxically, you know, toxic environments. And if you're in that for 3 months, 6 months, that's terrible, right? And that's how long it takes to search. That's how long the job searching process takes, because it's so bad. So yeah, no, not going to happen. And so these cultures are going to have to change. Because if everybody can leave at once, if everybody can, you know, bail quicker, you know, faster, well, then it's going to change. And here's the other thing that's also, you know, gives me hope and happiness, you know, while I'm out there seeing all this every day. And that's that the stock market has valued emotional intelligence finally. And we see that in by way of holding compensation on retention statistics, diversity statistics at the executive level. We see that by way of things that the federal government's doing in legislation. And we see that literally in the numbers based, you know, in terms of companies and success and who, you know, the retention statistics are in high EQ environments, and people want to invest in that type of a story more than not having that high EQ environment. And so money being attached to this, which is the only thing that makes anything happen, unfortunately, is here upon us. And now that money is attached to it, plus we're going to be able to say hasta la vista in a fashion that actually makes people wake up. You know, you put those two things together, I expect that we'll see the change. And then we all need to demand the training. You know, demand the training.
Yeah, absolutely. So we could sit here and talk about everything that we've been talking about for hours and hours and hours. However, yes. Unfortunately, for this conversation, we do have to start wrapping it up, just for timeline reasons. So you've given a lot of information for our listeners and for just the industry as a whole. So if someone wanted to continue this conversation with you or find out more about everything that we've talked about and get it directly from the source, such as yourself, what is the best way for a listener to reach out to you?
Absolutely. So I'm on LinkedIn. Twitter is at Deidre Diamond. I'm also on Instagram, although I don't go there as much. And I have a YouTube channel where I post all my talks. There's a lot of great content, so check that out too.
Oh, awesome. Well, we'll make sure that all those links get put into the show notes, so that way folks can reference those that want to reach out to you. So I think we're about time for wrapping it up. Jax, do you have anything else to share with Deidre?
Oh my gosh, Deidre, this has been amazing. We're going to definitely have you back for a second episode so we can do a follow-up, because there's so much information and this was amazing. Thank you again for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I love you all, and I'd love to come back. I'm releasing a behavioral standard, inclusion standard, and so we can talk about that for sure. Those rules, those basic rules. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, I would love that. And John is officially cute, so that's I love it. Have a good one.
Take Bye. Care.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Hackers and Hack Zen podcast with Erica, Jax, and John. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itsbmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.